Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the On The Box podcast, a television show podcast on the Anfield Index podcast channel. And I'm back again this week with another special Game of Thrones, well, kind of series episode. It's episode 6 of season 7, Beyond the Wall. And this one was leaked early this week. The hackers or whatever, people are just going crazy. But not only that, even HBO Spain and I don't know who, Nordic as well, I think, releasing this one early. Madness. But to talk about this epic episode, it really was something special. Her watch had ended, but just like Jon Snow, you know, she died and she's come back, so she doesn't have to be on watch again, but she can do whatever she wants. It's Nina Kowser. Welcome back, Nid.
I know.
Free
I'm
person.
Back.
You're free. Like Tormund. The free folk.
The free folk. You know what? I dig their attire. They dress really well, so I'm down with that.
The fuck are you on about? Anyway, we've also got someone joining us again. He's back. He was on the Master of None podcast, I think it was.
Yeah, that's right.
It's DJ Jessel. How are you doing, Jess?
I'm very well, thank you, Gags. Thanks for having me on.
Welcome
back,
mate.
Can't wait to dig into this.
This is a pretty special episode. Can I just get a little bit from you about how you felt after watching this, like at the end? Don't give anything away. Obviously, we're going to talk about it. But Jess, what did you feel at the end of this episode? When you switched it off or when it ended and cut to black, what did you think?
Well, I've managed to watch this episode 3 times, so I'll give you 3 brief reactions. The first time I was absolutely exhilarated and it was just a roller coaster ride of excitement and thrills. It was just great TV. The second time I watched it, a few things kind of started to irk me a little bit. And then by the third time I watched it, I was kind of like, there's a lot that doesn't quite make sense here. But I guess in this type of show, the way that it's heading, you just have to suspend your belief and just enjoy it. If you start pulling at too many threads, you'll just like ruin your whole enjoyment of the entire premise. So I don't think it was the greatest episode of Game of Thrones ever, but it was certainly one of the most enjoyable. Absolutely.
Interesting. We'll talk about that later. I think on first watch, you know, if you watch it once, it is probably the greatest. But I think, like you said, repeat viewings probably pick out a few things. But yeah, we can talk about them as we go through the episode. Nin, what were your thoughts, you know, at the end when you stopped watching this or when it ended?
Mm-hmm. I mean, when I initially watched it, I did go out and say, oh my God, that is the best episode ever. You know, I said that. Can't really add any more to what Jessel said, DJ Jessel has said there. Although I'm really intrigued to see what irks him. I look forward to hearing that. I'm just going to put into context. I told my brother to go and watch it, watch the leaked episode and get back to me text me it or whatever. Just get back to me. Just tell me what you thought of it. My brother never, ever texts me. I could be held at knife point. The guy will never, ever message me. That's how he is. And he went and watched the episode and I got a message from him. So Game of Thrones, bringing families together. Thank you so much.
Yeah, he couldn't.
It was 2 a.m. though. And all he wrote was, "But oh my God, wow."
Yeah, it's like.
A man of many words, and that was quite a few. So I was a bit disappointed, but.
Yeah, at least you got something from him. But I think the thing with this show was that it takes your breath away. It took, literally takes your breath away. This one, the first watch especially, is just like heart pumping. You know, you're just like, oh my God. I can't believe what's going on. It's so tense. You know, I told so many people, if you need to, you know, before you watch this, if you're dying to go for a piss, I'd go before you watch it, because yeah, you will piss yourself. It's that tense. I watched it with my wife when I was watching it. I watched it before her. So when I watched it with her, you know, she was like waving at the screen, shit like that, you know, like just crazy, like what the hell motions going on. Like it's just so interactive because you're just like, no, but we'll get there. We'll get there. Let's get the Winterfell portions of this show out the way, because then we can talk about all the good stuff beyond the wall. Yeah. It's actually titled Beyond the Wall, this one. And obviously because of what happened, but, Nin, Winterfell kicks off really with Arya outing Sansa, and she basically tells her, you know, I think you conspired to kill, you know, our father.
Yeah, and you know, and she also fesses up to the fact that she's there in the crowd, and there's that frosty exchange between them, you know, like. Again, I think in the previous episodes when we covered this, I've always said when them two sort of reunite, I think she's going to have a lot of grudges towards her sister, her elder sister Sansa, for the death of her dad, and obviously the entire family, pretty much due to her, you know, selfish desires, shall we say. And you know, she basically said, "I would have died before writing that letter." And I love the quote between them, because Sansa says, you know, she's absolutely bricking it because she thinks she's going to expose her to all the lords for what a coward she truly is. And I love what Sansa says. Anger makes you do unfortunate things. And Arya's response was, sometimes fear makes you do unfortunate things. I'll go with anger. And I love that. And she just walked out and left her to kind of rot and fester to see what her next move is going to be. Is she going to rat her out? Isn't she? But I love the fact that animosity is there again, because if it was all hunky-dory between them, I don't think it would have been believable, because I think, as we all know, Arya was a proper little daddy's girl. Even though she was a tomboy, I think her dad favoured her more than the other daughter. So yeah, I love the fact that she still got that, you know, that
fight. She was a girly girl, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Sansa was a girly girl and this she's a tomboy, and obviously her dad was always trying to push her to go the other way. No, be a girly girl. And she's like, nah, man, I want to fight.
Yeah, he booked her sword fighting lessons and stuff. He embraced it. I think he kind of liked it.
Yeah, of course. It was that was a touching part of everything that happened, and he kind of set her on her way, if you think about it,
yeah,
to go on this path. But Jessa, don't you feel sorry at all for Sansa, though? Because I've watched the whole series back as well, and I kind of did feel she was forced into that. No one gives their life away, you know? Like, you know, I was saying I'd give my life away first. It's easy to say, but at that point in time, it's not about giving your life away. It's about saving your dad's life, surely.
Yeah, and it's worth remembering how young she was as well. And the amount of things she's been through in the show. She tries telling Arya, look, you don't know what I've been through. You couldn't understand. You wouldn't even survive it. And obviously, we don't know whether she would or not, because Arya's had her own troubles and journey. But Sansa's been through a lot. And I do feel sorry for her at times. She's kind of getting it from all sides at the moment, to be honest. And the last thing she needs is basically shit from Arya, her little sister, who, let's face it right now, I love her. I love her character, but she's a murdering psycho, and she's twisted and contorted by revenge and hatred. You know, she's spent years training to become an assassin. She literally committed mass murder at the beginning of this season, right? She wiped out, like, what, 60 people in one go, cooked some of them in a pie. I mean, Jesus Christ, this is not someone that we should feel ultimate sympathy for, even if we like her. And now she's kind of threatening Sansa. I mean, the only thing I don't understand exactly what's going on between them, because part of me thinks this might just be like a rope-a-dope thing where they're trying to lure Littlefinger into their own trap or something, because not all of it makes sense. I mean, I know a lot of you, and I've listened to all the podcasts, a lot of you want Littlefinger to die. I want him on the Iron Throne. I love that guy. I don't even give a shit. I love him. And that
he's fuck
conniving.
Is going on?
I love him. It would be hilarious. What a twist that would be. What a twist if he actually made it to the Iron Throne somehow. But I don't want him to die. I don't know what happens. I haven't read any of the leaked scripts or anything like that. But I kind of, I mean, okay, maybe not win the whole thing, but I like him. I don't want him just to die. And I like that he's playing them off each other in a clever way. Arya's out of her depth a little bit. She is conniving. She is cunning. She can switch faces. But man, Littlefinger has a lifetime's worth experience of this.
Your reaction to that, Nin?
It's very true. I mean, love him or love him, it's a bit like Cersei, isn't it? He does make the series. He is a conniving little sod, and you do, you know, I love the way he worms his way into people and sort of influences them. Wherever he goes, he has a mass influence. You know, he's able to corrupt that person. That is a sign of a really, really powerful character. I do think, yeah, she's a young girl out of her depth, and I completely agree in that regard that she's obviously not got nowhere near as much experience as him. But she, again, you've kind of alluded to the fact that she is a bit of a loose cannon, a psychopath, and it literally take one twitch or one second with him and she could potentially just slit his throat.
Yeah, and not only that, the other thing is that he is, like, I mean, manipulating Sansa totally in this episode again. And pretty much convinced her, I reckon. I mean, what do you think, Nin, is the premise of this King's Landing invite? Because is that all a setup? It wasn't really clear whether it was a setup or not.
I think with the King's Landing thing, I mean, I know you saw it as a trap and Sansa saw it as a trap as well. But initially, maybe I'm naive, but I thought it had something to do with, you know, everyone congregating together. You know, Daenerys is going to go there as well. And it was that whole Tyrion and Jaime sort of speaking. I thought it might be like a whole council committee meeting about these White Walkers. And
so you think that's legit then? So you think it's legit?
I honestly thought it was an invite to that. I genuinely did. Call me naive. But Littlefinger saying, I mean, you know, when she's... another thing as well, Sansa confiding in Littlefinger pissed me off as well, because she should know better than anyone. Jon's warned her about him. She knows he's got history. Brienne's done it a million times, that watch yourself around him, watch yourself around him.
In this she episode as well?
Watch yourself. He wants to get into your pants. She knows this. She knows this, but she confides because she's got no other ally. So I can get that. So I do feel sorry for her. He's almost like the only person that she can kind of turn to and talk to. And he goes... how about Brienne Stark? And he's given her a solution. She swore to protect both Catelyn Stark's daughters. She sends her away to King's Landing to represent House Stark, et cetera, et cetera. And then the penny dropped in my head. Has she potentially sent her away so she could pretty much dispose of Arya?
Yeah, that's the thing that comes in my mind. Jessel, would you say the same thing? I mean, or are you thinking like, originally thinking like, Nin, this is the whole... get everybody together, ploy.
I don't know. I have no idea why they're calling everyone to King's Landing. But, I mean, sending Brienne away seems like a weird one. Also, the other thing I'd say is that Sansa listening to Littlefinger now raised my suspicions, because actually, all series long, she's been saying, no, don't trust that guy.
Exactly.
So why is she suddenly trusting him to such an extent that she's trusting him over her own sister?
She's in the shit. That's why.
That's true, but I still can't. I just can't help thinking this is some sort of elaborate trap that Sansa and Arya are cooking up between them to get Littlefinger. I don't know.
I hope you're right. I hope you're right.
Oh my God, that's really good. I was thinking the other way, that, you know, Sansa has seen the North Lords, right, turn on Jon, or not turn on him, but at least question him to her. Yeah, say that we want to follow you. So she's scared that any kind of negativity about her, they're going to be easy to switch. To turn on her too. So she is just in a state of proper panic. Just like the throne, like Game of Thrones, it's about that throne in, you know, in Winterfell is hers at the moment.
Jessel's got me thinking now, and now I'm thinking maybe every time she spoke up to John, every time there's been a council meeting, has it always been a ploy to kind of get him to kind of conspire against John to feel him out?
It could well be. And if you don't forget the kind of interaction between Jon Snow and Littlefinger, where he grabs him by the throat and says, look, if you touch, you know, I mean, Jon really doesn't like Littlefinger. And the other thing is I don't know, this series, what's Littlefinger actually done wrong I can't really think of too many things standards.
Does it really matter what he's done wrong in this season? It's what he's done wrong in the fucking life, surely? That matters nothing. His history,
you can't love wipe can it. Change a man. Love can change a man. Maybe no. He really loves Sans.
He wanted to have a part to play, you know, and she's really got a high horse in that. She brings it up with Arya as well. That's her claim to fame. I won. Yeah, I won that battle. Nobody else. It was me. So, I mean, I think, and I don't know whether you agree with this or not, let's just go and talk about, before we go into some theories, the end, the last bit where she finds her faces and she shits herself totally. Absolutely shits herself. And you actually think Arya's going to kill her or do something, but she hands her the dagger. I mean, what does that... That doesn't look like a ploy. To eat, you know, like what just what you said there.
That's a threat, man. That's a threat. That's
exactly.
A
so it doesn't seem to me like they're playing against off each other to get him. Do you get what I mean? That seemed like a real fucking throwdown. Like, yeah, I'm going to come and get you or whatever. But what did you take of that scene, Jess?
I mean, that knife, it's a bit past the parcel right now, isn't it? Littlefinger gives it to Bran, who gives it to Arya, who's giving it to Sansa right now. I don't know if one of them wins a prize or something. But what I took it to be is maybe Sansa ends up killing Littlefinger with that knife. Maybe she finds herself in a situation or something. I mean, okay, let me ask you guys this question. As it stands right now, out of Arya, Sansa and Littlefinger, who do you think is most likely to die in episode 7, if any of them?
It would have to be Littlefinger for me.
Yeah, Littlefinger for me.
I think Arya might die. I don't know why. I've just got a hunch. I've just got a slight hunch.
She just cried. She almost cried then.
but if you think about it, what is she serving? How is she serving the plot? She's not really serving the plot against the White Walkers, because anyone can kill them as long as they've got like some dragon glass. She's not really serving the plot of Game of Thrones, who's going to be on the Iron Throne so much. I mean, Sansa and Littlefinger kind of are, at least they're kind of more directly involved. It wouldn't surprise me if they killed her off, but I mean, it'd be a shock death, don't get me wrong, but I mean, Littlefinger is a clever dude. You just never know what's going to happen. I think Brienne being away is the key though.
Yeah, he is the key, and I think you're right. This could be, I mean, I don't think anyone gets
she needs to meet John.
Well, this is one of the, that's how they pull at your heartstrings, don't they?
I know. I should learn better.
Yeah, so that'll be the bit that hurts the most. She never got to meet John again, even though she came back to Winterfell. But maybe they lock her up. Maybe they just lock her up in the end because she's going to kill, you know, this threat to Sansa, and John has to come and save her. And then obviously the whole plot changes with John being half tagged, but we can get there. But I just think that Bran's got a big part to play.
Yeah,
in these three people, he surely knows what's going on. He already knows what's been happening so far, so he knows Littlefinger's playing them off each other. He's going to be like the peacemaker. He might just come in and say, "Look, this guy's doing it," and then right, kill him or whatever. Or you know, they make their decisions from there. Mm-hmm. But I just feel Bran's got a big part to play in what happens with the three of these. And maybe they actually just lock Littlefinger up and don't kill him because he is quite important with the Knights of Vale and stuff as well, isn't he?
Mm. I mean, on a complete side note, I love the fact that, you know, Sansa went snooping into Arya's stuff and goes into a satchel and finds, you know, faces. I literally found that really funny, and like, obviously everything's been unveiled that she's an absolute little psycho who like carves people up. Can you imagine?
Finding out your sister's a fucking assassin. Little one as well, little sister.
And she goes, "What are those?" And she went, "They're my faces." I was like, fucking hell.
I know. I didn't know who the first face was, by the way. I couldn't tell.
No, I didn't know. No,
I couldn't tell either. What about you, Jess? Could you tell who the first face was she pulled out?
I have no idea. It's all very Scooby-Doo, isn't it?
I like it.
It's all very Scooby-Doo. And she's Scrappy. I always call her Scrappy. She's a fighter, this one. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much what we're going to talk about. I mean, did you guys have any other theories on what's going to happen? I do think Bran plays the key part. Nin?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I think Bran is obviously probably the least like warrior-esque, can't do much, but obviously knows things, has seen things, and he's the one that's going to make everything apparent.
Yes.
Yeah, I think Bran is the key. I mean, he's kind of like WikiLeaks, but without dumping all the information with everyone. He knows everything, but I think right now he just doesn't know what to do with it. And I think, like, my last point on this, because I think you're right to actually get this out of the way, I kind of would have liked this as an episode to be completely about the guys beyond the wall. I think that would have been kind of fun. I think the overarching theme of this episode is kind of fractures between siblings, basically, because last week was kind of about fathers and sons, and this week is about relationship problems between siblings. And we'll get into that more as the episode goes on, but it's very obvious between Arya and Sansa.
Yes, big problems ahead. Let's see what happens in that final episode of the season. Maybe they leave it open, but there's shitloads going on. Much bigger battles going on, and we'll go right there. Oh my god, and then they actually started off with some real good stuff, building up to obviously some of the stuff that happens, the special effects and CGI heavy stuff that they do. But before that, there's some really comedic timing stuff going on with Tormund and the Hound as well.
Yeah, it was really funny. I mean, obviously there's people who've got like axes to grind, like is it Gendry? He's mad at the priest for leaving him with the high priestess and all that, you know, so there's a lot of beef there. And I love the ginger wildling. I love the fact that he goes, I hate the South. It stinks of piss or shit or whatever he says. And then I think it's John that goes, you've never been to the North. I mean, you've never been to the South. He goes, I have. I've been to Winterfell. And you know, to me, I laughed my head off because it sounded like my every Scottish friend who comes to Manchester, who thinks everything is down South. Like, I get called a Southern fairy by Scottish people. And I took that from it and it really made me laugh. But yes, and then obviously him saying, I don't like gingers, the Hound, and X, Y, and Z. I just thought I loved the dialogue between them. I love the fact that it kind of started off quite lighthearted. And you thought, oh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be a merry journey. Not quite.
Jessel, the other funny bit was obviously Gendry. You know, he was scaring him, wasn't he? Like, you know, we just had you warm your balls up and stuff. And they're like, there's no women around for thousands of miles or whatever, hundreds of miles. And he goes, you just take what you can get. And Gendry, like, just stopped and just moved back. He goes, he's a weird one, him, isn't he? He's not very bright, that one.
Tormund is just hilarious. Yeah. The amount of great lines he had in this is just hilarious.
It was just brilliant. And then Gendry obviously starts mouthing off what's their name? The Brotherhood. He starts fucking telling them off and moaning at them. And the response from the Hound, like, that doesn't sound so bad to me. You being naked with another woman. Was she naked too? And then he's just like, oh, stop whinging. And he goes, your mouth's open and you're moaning about, complaining about something. You're whinging. Oh, this guy died six times. Do you hear him moan? Oh, it was just great. You know, they just bought off. They made it so lighthearted. And for what was to come, I think they probably needed it, didn't they?
I think some people found it a bit kind of on the nose and stuff, but I loved it. It was like the Magnificent Seven or you know, Seven Samurai, that kind of stuff. You've got Jon, Gendry, Thoros, Beric, Jorah, Tormund, and the Hound. You've also got sort of two or three random soldiers doing all the work, and you know they're going to die at some point. But the great interplay between them comes because they've never really met each other, not so much, and you sort of got all these backstories and all these kind of inside things that we know that they don't necessarily know, like, you know, these famous fights on the beach and the Hound knows who knows who Brienne is as much
so
as Tormund.
Funny as well.
It's just brilliant. I think it was fantastic. I loved it. And you're right, it was a light relief before like the storm, you know.
Lynn, you loved that bit, didn't you, with Tormund and the Hound saying, you know,
I'm going to make babies with her. She doesn't know it yet.
What the fuck? But apart from the laughter, like Jessel just said, there were some really important things in there, you know, with Jon Snow and Ser Jorah having a chat, you know, and obviously they're talking about his dad and how he was the commander and how he died, and just telling him the story of what happened, and he was, you know, he was quite upset about it. But then he's the kind one, the noble one, you know, he's the martyr. No matter what, people find it, you know, annoying at times, but that's his personality. He gives his sword to him and says, look, your dad gave me this, but change.
Which is quite ironic because he's a bastard, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Apparently a bastard.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then he gives it, but he's, you know, Ser Jorah is a step above. He's like, now I've learned from my mistakes, you know, I'm not worthy of this. Mm-hmm. So you keep it. And I think that probably got a little bit of respect in Ser Jorah's eyes as well, which is important going forward because he's a big confidant of Danny's as well, isn't he? So it's just one of those I just thought it was an important thing between the two of them to get a bit of respect for each other, because that both of them got to respect each other immediately with that little just 2 minutes. I mean, I don't know if you agree with that, guys.
I mean, it's kind of like a test, isn't it? I don't know if back in your younger single days or whatever, but if you and a guy both fancied the same girl and you would test each other with a certain interaction, and this was kind of John testing Jorah and Jorah testing John back with this sword. They're both in love with Dany, or at least, well, Jorah's absolutely obsessed with her, but John might just kind of have feelings for her. So I took that sword to also kind of represent perhaps their feelings for Dany. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Wow. I didn't even think of it like that.
I didn't know.
I really didn't.
And let me tell you, if I was a guy in my single years, I'd be the first one there.
Holy shit. She says stupid. But then, again, the story, you mentioned it about Pike between Ser Jorah and Tharys, is it? And how he's asking, because we talked about it in the last episode where, you know, he charged into this battle with a flaming sword and people thought he was a god. And he goes, you know, I thought you were so brave. And he goes, nah, mate, I was just fucking pissed. You know,
the next morning.
Yeah, he goes, I heard about it the next day. And he's just like, he's just smashing away those legends, you know, absolutely. You know, that is so funny because he's built up to be this massive hero, but he's just like, yeah, I was pissed. It's just so good. So, so good. And like, there's so much history about that. And so many people in the show have mentioned it at different stages. And, you know, it got over as such a big story that he just tarnishes it immediately, you know. But lovely little scene. And then I think the final one was with Beric Dondarrion and Jon Snow when they're conversing. And I found this important because, you know, he says to him, you don't look like Ned, you know. So they always drop in those hints, you know. He's like, you don't, oh, you must look like your mother. You must have got, and he is totally like his mother because she was dark haired and he's not blonde. He's not blonde. So he's got to be like his mother. Right. So it makes sense. And just like the story of how, you know, Ned or the Stark sent Beric off to hunt the mountain and all that stuff. And it was just in the end, you know, death is the enemy, the first enemy. And the last, the enemy always wins and we still need to fight him. And then John saying, you know, no, he says we can defend those that can't defend themselves. And then John's quote, I am the shield that guards the realm of men. That's part of the Night's Watch oath. And it just tells you again about John that it's kind of like within him always to look out for people, always to save, you know, what's he been doing the whole fucking season? The whole season is about saving everybody. Like, we need to band together to kill the Nightwalk, the whites and the dead that are coming, because we're all going
to
die.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, to be honest. And I don't think Dany quite understands it. She's been kind of feeling him out over the past few episodes. I think she kind of thinks, I mean, she makes a reference to it later, we'll get to that, but it's kind of like she thinks these guys are going off on a dick swinging contest or something. But really, the reality is Jon Snow is just such a good person. And yeah, he can be a bit of a martyr, but it's because he realizes what's at stake. You know, he realizes that the entire humanity is at stake, because if the army of the dead come in, they're all fucked, basically. So he has to, this is such a big thing. They need this common enemy. They need to band together. I mean, even in this episode, these seven guys, they have history. Some of them don't like each other or what their parents have done and all this kind of stuff, but they all band together because there's a common enemy. So John is a bit of a martyr, yeah, but and he continues to be throughout the episode, but it's for a good reason.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. Nin, any thoughts on that stuff?
No, I can't really add to that. I think as well, the reason why he keeps possibly quoting like when he was on the Night's Watch is because probably that's when he probably felt the most comfortable himself.
Yeah, learned a lot about himself, didn't he, there?
Learned a lot about himself, because even though he's the Lord of Winterfell, or was the Lord of Winterfell, because he's going to, we'll talk about that later, but people still question him and his leadership. And when they did it, when he was on the Night's Watch, he just basically killed them once they turned on him. So I think that's when he was probably his own man.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Nin, let's go to Dragonstone now, because this is where Tyrion and Daenerys are discussing heroes. And Tyrion claims that Jon's in love with her. And she says he's too little for it.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's because of, I think she apologises as well.
She goes, you're brave.
I love the fact that she goes that you're not a hero. And then he's trying to remind her when he went charging out of King's Landing and he points at his scar. trying to qualify the fact that he is a hero.
Yeah, it's so funny. It's just like, but it doesn't stay lighthearted, Jess. They end up in, Jess, they end up having a row, don't they?
They do. And in my notes here, the first thing I've got, I don't mean to offend anyone, but the first thing I say is Tyrion is being a little bitch. And he is, I think this season, he's got almost everything wrong, as Danny says. And he seems to want to be able to do everything so cleanly. He wants to win everything cleanly. I think as you guys were saying on last week's podcast, but actually, you know, you have to break some eggs to make an omelette. And Danny realizes this after Elena told her a few episodes back. So technically, he might be right about certain things, but in the end, Danny has to do what she has to do. She has to jump on a dragon and go save people, because actually, it's really important to the end game. I think my chief thing with Tyrion right now is that he's not, you know, to use Godfather parlance, he's not a consigliere. You know, he's not. Jorah Mormont is. I'd trust him in a war situation. I wouldn't trust Tyrion in a war situation. He's a politician. He can talk to people. But he's got everything wrong so far. Maybe he's due a big win in the last episode. I don't know. But I don't know. I just feel the interplay. Danny's right to slap him down, basically. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Nin, your thoughts on this?
Well, it's funny. Jessel made that Godfather reference. He's like Tom Hagen, isn't he? He's not Don Corleone.
Exactly.
I see what he's saying.
If you're in a war, you need someone with real war experience.
Yeah, Tyrion
doesn't really, you know, he had one minor episode, that's it. But otherwise, someone like Jorah really understands war and tactics and things like that. Like Jaime is a real war veteran,
yes.
But Tyrion is not. So I don't know. I mean, as for the other thing that he raises with Danny, I think he's kind of right to raise the issue of her having an heir or a successor to the throne, but maybe not at that exact moment. I don't know. I mean, it pisses her off a lot, to be honest.
I love the fact that she calls him out as well. You've been thinking about my death, have you? Is it something you discussed with your brother or something? She says to him, she calls him out on it.
Yeah, she does. I think he's right, though, because she's fucking flying around everywhere.
And do you want to know something as well? I mean, I don't know what the listenership is to this pod, but as a woman, like personally, that would be a very, very touchy subject, knowing that you can't have children and someone's discussing it. And I love the fact that they bought the fact that she was quite short and snappy with him.
Yeah, it's one of your personal thing, isn't it?
As a woman, I really appreciate that. It made her human.
Yeah, and it made the feelings came out that, you know, I can't have a kid. What? How am I going to fucking find a successor, you twat? Mm-hmm. You know, type thing. It's kind of like, we need to think about this. We can't
just
decide.
Very believable that her reaction there.
Yeah, I mean, I see his point of view. If you're going to be flying around in dragons and you could take a spear, a scorpion spear, say, at any point it could miss the dragon and go straight through your face. I totally agree. I don't know what you guys thought, but this is where one of my crazy predictions comes in, that they're kind of setting up a death, her death. That's what I think with the succession stuff and her just throwing it out there. But yeah, that's just me. But we can talk about that when we get to the end of the theories part. But going back to Beyond the Wall, this is where Nin, they meet the blue-eyed bear.
Yeah.
Horror scene.
And I can't think which one. Was it Gendry who goes, the bears have blue eyes?
Yeah.
All you see is like this mist and somebody crosses. You know, obviously there's the main gang there and they've got a few extras, because I think there's about 12 of them. I didn't count them. Is there about 12?
I don't know. There's quite
I think there's the seven main guys, and I think there's three foot soldiers, basically.
Yeah, some extras. And obviously they're the ones that obviously meet their end, but somebody just gets taken to bits. And then obviously the blizzard cleans off and all he sees is spear and just blood everywhere. And then, the bear just attacks them. And it's basically, it kind of reminded me of, like, I don't know, like Avengers, the way they all had to kind of get together and tag team and use their different skills and all their weapons and obviously the flamed sword. And it was just brilliant. And I actually thought at that moment, the Hound, you know what I loved about that scene? You thought any one of them could die at any minute and you became quite detached to them. And that was when reality kicked in, that hang on, this isn't a merry day field trip out in Beyond the Wall. This is serious shit. They've gone to collect a White Walker to present as evidence. And that's when the edge of the seat stuff started happening for me, because I actually thought the Hound was going to die, I'll be honest.
Yeah, because the Hound, what happened was, he would have fought that bear no problem. As soon as they set the bastard on fire, he shit it, Jess. It was cold, but he froze. He literally fucking froze, didn't he? And Thoris saved his life. He pretty much pushes him out the way, takes the hit. That is literally what happened.
It was one of those things where it definitely, you know, something's coming, but it still scares the shit out of you anyway. And then you've got the dynamic of the hound with the fire and stuff like that. You're right. It's kind of that, Nin's right. It's that moment where shit gets real and they suddenly all realize it. And then after that, they're not quite so jolly with each other, are they? Once the bear is dispatched, I mean, that's just the start of their troubles, isn't it?
It is just the start of their troubles. I mean, Sejora kills him off. Really good scene. He gets set on fire as well. He passed that down. They basically patch up Thoris with the flaming sword so that he can... it's funny how he just swigs on the fucking the alcohol first to get himself really fucking drunk if he could. I love that character. He's so good. But yeah, They then move on, and I think the Hound, we've switched a little bit because we've missed out bits of Wittenfeld because we covered it already, but they come back when they're walking, and the Hound then says, you know, I saw that mountain in the flames, as it, you know, the way they got to go. And it's quite weird because the mountain is who threw him in the flames when he was a kid. Just the way he said it, it just, the first thing clicked to me was, yeah, your brother threw you in there. Now you're seeing mountains in flames. You want to see your brother in flames? Quite interesting. Anyway, so they make their way there, and Tormund stops them, doesn't he? And then they see a batch of whites with a White Walker.
Yeah, you kind of think, there's a few of them, but there's going to be many more lurking. And obviously they ambush them, and you think, oh, they've got the upper hand here. And obviously they start fighting them, and they're all in combat, so to speak. And then John's fighting the lead one, the one with the long hair. And as soon as he puts the sword through him, they all sort of shatter, die, collapse. And that's a bit of a nugget of information, or could be, in the sense that when you're going to fight them, if you kill maybe the leads, maybe you dismantle some of that army, it dies. That was the big reveal.
Basically,
yeah, that was quite a nice little bit of information to receive. And one of them doesn't, the one that kind of looked a bit like a gargoyle, I don't know, like, just, you know, he didn't. And he, obviously, that's what they were going to capture. And then he starts shrieking, putting out the call to the masses of armies. And of course, John anticipated this and thought, shit, they're all coming now. And obviously sends a Gendry on his merry way to, is it Eastwatch, to go and send the raven to Daenerys because he's the quickest. So already he's anticipating that this was just a small sample. There's lords lurking and we need backup quick because shit really, really does get real. Like Jessel just said there, that was the beginning of their troubles. Now things just got real.
Yeah, Jessel, that is the key, right? That little nugget, like she said, of information was crazy. That you kill him and a whole bunch die. So the whole way they plan it going forward, especially in the last episode, is can we try and target, you know, the Nightwalker and his White Walkers?
Yeah, well, I mean, they even say it later in this episode. I think it was Thoros said it, maybe, or the other one.
Sejora talks to John about it, like, you killed one earlier, didn't you? And they all died.
Yeah. It's clearly going to come back at some point, for sure. I think one of the issues that people had with this episode is that this plan is absolutely ridiculous. I have to say, like, it's entertaining, but it's kind of like an excuse to get all these guys together and have action romp, basically. But if you give more than a minute's thought to this plan, it's suicidal. It is ridiculous. And Dany even says it. She's like, okay, they're all trying to be brave, but they're being stupid. And I think very, very quickly after this, they suddenly realize that, yes, maybe we've gone in over our heads. Because
you're right,
there's no logic.
There's no logic to what they're doing. Absolutely none.
No logic whatsoever. They could fly in on a dragon, fly over, pick one up, and just fly straight back. Yeah. But no, they've got this kind of weird thing. And you have to kind of suspend your belief. So John sends Gendry off because he's the fastest. I'm not quite sure how we know this, but I guess he is a bit sort of smaller and he looks a bit more nimble than the others. And Tormund takes his hammer, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's important. He goes, give me your hammer. You go and it'll slow you down. I need it as well. He doesn't have anything special, does he? So he goes, you fuck off. So, from my point of view, also, what came out of this little bit was that they can fucking call each other with just a screech. You know, that white that they grabbed, all it did was scream in some kind of a different...
It reminded me of Lord of the Rings and the Uruk-hais or something.
Yeah.
I got that vibe from it.
And I mean, the writer of the books has taken Lord of the Rings as
I make a few references in my notes to Lord of the Rings a fair few times.
Yeah, because that's where he's taking inspiration. He's taking inspiration of Lord of the Rings as well. So basically, he just that screech from him. Then all of a sudden, they wrap him up or tie him up or whatever, put a thing over his head for some reason. I don't know why, but maybe because it's like the Night King can see through them, like, you know, view through them or something like that. I don't know. It's kind of like a Bran thing. You know, like how Bran can do.
Like warging a bit, isn't it?
Yeah, because he can see Bran. Remember when Bran it's got to work both ways. Do you get me, Jess? If Bran can see him, but then he looks at the sparrow or whatever it is that's in the air, the crow, but then he can see where Bran is. It's kind of like they're both the same.
Hmm.
No, not the same,
I think
the same type of thing.
I mean, this is one.
Are you like the
we'll
Eye of Sauron, isn't it?
Yes.
Sorry,
the Eye of Sauron. Talking about the Eye of Sauron, fucking the dragon's eyes are the Eye of Sauron. They are. You know, when you look at Drogon's eye, anytime it looks like the Eye of Sauron, but okay, maybe not. Anyway, when you next look at the Eye of the Dragon, not the tiger, then the dragon. Check it out. I was just saying, if I kind of feel like the Night King has many more powers than we feel. I know he raises the dead and all that, but I think he can see things too. And maybe we'll get there. But there's hints of it because, like I said, he can see Bran. If Bran's looking at him, he can see him back. It's weird. It's dead weird. So, yeah, there's that. And I thought that was the other key thing that came out of that scene. So they move on. Now is the ambush, isn't it, Jess? They are fucked right now.
They are indeed fucked.
This is where we're shitting assholes.
It's kind of a contrived scene, but I don't care. It's just so much fun. They're running across the ice. It starts cracking. They're like, shit, okay, we better run. And, you know, conveniently, there's this big rock placed in the middle of it. But, I mean, you could kind of look at that as an allegory for other things, perhaps. Anyway, so the zombies start chasing them and stuff and falling into the water. And so these guys get a reprieve. So the zombies decide en masse, okay, let's just wait for the ice to freeze over, and so they just wait it out, basically. And so the Night King's just standing there, just watching. And what do you think happened? Not what do you think happened, but in terms of how do you think it kind of played out time wise? How long do you think they had to kind of wait on that rock in the middle, surrounded by thousands?
Days. I reckon it's days. It's got to be days.
But it's so cold. That water should have frozen up in minutes.
Not minutes.
This is what I mean about time.
Not minutes.
The time didn't make any sense when I watched it second time round. It was, it's freezing cold. Somebody froze to death. The priest froze to death.
Yeah, but to develop an ice thick enough to carry that weight, yeah, takes time then.
Okay, that might take time. I'm just thinking about me just crossing. Sorry. I didn't think about the army.
Yeah. I mean, for that army to cross without it crumbling, it's going to take a long time to get to that thickness of ice, yeah? I think I totally agree with you. It'll freeze. But to get to that thickness, to hold that weight, that's the only bit that saves that. Thinking about it in depth is what saves that it's been a long time. But then these guys are right as well. I mean, how would they survive in the cold? Has that sword may help them survive? You know, the light, the flaming sword maybe, giving them some heat because they burnt the body as well. That would have made it a bit warmer there, a little bit for a bit. But
then no food as well, Gags.
No food at all. So it wouldn't have been weeks. It wouldn't have been weeks. I could think they could survive days. They could survive days, but not weeks. This season has no concept of time.
Mm-hmm.
The ravens must be like Concord.
Yes.
You know.
They're on speed.
Yeah, how fucking fast did the raven get to Dragonstone? Like, do you get what I mean? But you've got to, like Jess said earlier, you defy logic because you love the show. And there are loads of holes. The biggest hole is, why the fuck are they there? You know, what are they doing? Like, that's the biggest, what are you doing? You're stupid. And I think John does save it a little bit by saying that at the end, you know, like, we should never have gone. Do you get what I mean? Mm. But what they're saying is people make mistakes as well. And that's the other thing. And there was only five. They didn't send a fucking army, did they? They sent seven of them, which is even more daft. But at least send a fucking load of people to try and do it. But I suppose they wouldn't get there in time. But, I mean, Thoris dies, which is a shame. They burn him. and they have the discussion. I mean, Dondarrion is really like being ballsy and like, you know what, me and you are here for a reason. We ain't gonna die. We should kill him. And they're pointing at the Night King, and he's just standing there. And they're like, you know, the other
thing. They're having like a tactical conversation, weren't they, about the battle? Jon saying just wait out and wait for Daenerys and her dragons. You've got what's the guy called with the
that's
one
Dondarrion,
that's Dondarrion saying take out the lead White Walker. You and I have a purpose. We survived deaths, and you know the Lord of Light, they bring us back to freeze to death. And meanwhile, you've got Jorah saying, just aim for the White Walkers and then these will all die. You know, so they're actually having a tactical discussion whilst they're waiting it out, which I thought was quite good.
Which is great, but the Night King is so tactical. He's got them surrounded, Jess, but isn't he a bit stupid? They've got spears in their hands. Why aren't they throwing them?
This is one of the theories that we'll get to later. I mean, if you think about it, a spear isn't going to do that much. I don't know. I mean,
if you throw
you think?
1,000 spears at once.
Maybe. I mean,
not unless they're like stormtroopers, Gags.
Fucking hell, yeah, that's true. They never hit anything, stormtroopers. They could be shit, true. But what follows is the Hound being a right prat.
Oh, my God.
Go on, talk to me.
Christ. First of all, okay, so they wake up in the morning, and he just gets up. He's all grumpy because he's the Hound, and he just decides to kick the captured white in the stomach just for a laugh. So the white starts screaming. Next thing you know, he gets bored. So he picks up a rock and throws it as far as he can, and it cracks a skeleton's head wide open, and this kind of like rouses that white in particular. For some reason, he then picks up another one and chucks it. It doesn't reach quite as far, and it lands on the ice, which then displays to these whites that the ice has indeed gotten thick enough potentially for them to start walking over. And then he goes, oh shit. And it's like and the irony is, earlier in this episode, when him and Tormund are having their interaction, and Tormund's just going off on one about impregnating Brienne, the Hound is like, how did a mad fucker like you live this long? And the thing is, Hound is just chucking rocks at an army. It's like, you're the mad fucker right now. You need to chill right now, man. So then the whites start kind of, they've forgotten everything. They're just going for them. They start dragging their swords. They start rushing them. And you know, it's on.
Yeah, this is just the music here, right? As soon as the first hammer blow goes, the music is fantastic. The CGI, unbelievable. The setting, the tactical cam, you know, like you have at Anfield or Premier League games nowadays. There was a fucking tactical cam for this. They actually had a shot above, have all of them charging in. It's like unreal. It really sets it up, and you actually think, holy shit, how are you going to survive? How is this possible? And it really scares you.
I was so alarmed at the fact that no one called him a cunt for doing that. You know, one of the seven. Someone just lose your rag at him. Because I would have.
There's only five left now. Remember, five. One's dead.
Yeah, one's gone. Yeah, Gendry's gone. Yeah, five of them. How did no one lose their shit at him? I suppose it was a case of, you know what, I'll deal with you later. Should we survive? We're not going to survive. But let's try. But my God, that was when it got really, really tense, and you thought, shit, we're going to lose. And I think it was Joel Simpson who made the comment in one of your previous episodes saying that you become quite attached to these characters. And when one of them dies, it's like, oh my God. So in my head, when that scene happened, I was prepared for losing masses, you know, losing them all. And I should just detach myself from all of them, except for Jon Snow. I can never do that.
Yeah, so I thought the same. I thought someone's going here, defo, and I thought it was Tormund. And then they shut the music off. Like, it's just direction, right? They just shut the music off and get you ready for this death. And they want you to hear the gruesome screams. And then all of a sudden the music starts again when the Hound charges in. It's just brilliantly done, brilliantly shot. Everything about it, right, when you watch it again and again, it's just brilliantly done. I know there's logic flaws, but the actual entertainment part, the actual bit that they've done is riveting TV. You are like sucked in. You do not move. You are like, no, screaming your head off. And then they're all on this perch. Their backs against the wall. They're turning against each other, pretending like about to hit each other, but they realize it's them. These whites are climbing up that ledge, you know, up to John. He's about to strike. The music turns into that sad music that they normally do when people are going to die, you know? And you're like, oh, shit.
Again, that reminded me of Lord of the Rings as well, the Two Towers, when I can't think which one was, you know, he went to slow-mo and he's watching all his, you know, the elves and Aragorn and all these people fight. And then it's just like, oh my God, everyone, you know, they're going to die. You just see them killing. And then literally as he's about to swing his sword, here she comes with the dragons. But instead of Gandalf the White, it's Daenerys Targaryen.
She's pretty much Snow White, right, in this, because she's dressed for the occasion. She's got snow attire on that she, so she can camouflage in, kind of thing. Because yeah. You know, Tyrion's like, where the fuck are you going, mate? She's like, I ain't listening. Like you said earlier, Jess, I ain't listening to you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go fight some battles. Last time I listened to you, we fucked up. I need to go and sort this out. So off she goes to be the savior. She's got there in record time. Again, the dragons must have some kind of Concorde type flight speeds, because we don't know how long it's taken, but I suppose flying, you know, it is the best way to go, so you can, it's more believable, right? Both of you, it's much more believable that she flew there fast. But devastating that this is the scene that we've waited to see since the start. Dragons versus White Walkers and whites, and what the it was unbelievable, Jess. So good.
It was incredible. And like you were saying before, when John is kind of raising his sword and you think, yeah, this might just be the end, you kind of know, okay, at some point Danny's going to swoop in here. And it was kind of like watching Transformers, like a Michael Bay film.
Yeah, I thought that, but I thought, how many are going to die before she turns up? Do you get what I mean? That's what my thinking was. Carry on. Yeah.
When he swung his sword, did anyone else sort of have flashbacks of Battle of the Bastards? When
Me, like, yes, yes, along? completely. I mean, this actually reminded me of Battle of the Bastards quite a lot, to be honest. There are a lot of similarities there.
Because you were worried that he was going to die there too.
Yeah, you really were. But I think this was the best sequence of the episode. Like Gags was saying, I think it was just pure, just adrenaline. And then the dragons come in, so you know, like, okay, there's going to be fire. They've got a break and stuff. And they swoop in. They are just, you know, breathing fire all over the place in like this crisscross pattern and stuff like that. And I don't think it had quite the effect of the episode two, like two episodes back with the, what was that, Hardhome, was it? The real kind of battle scene thing.
No, it wasn't Hardhome. Hardhome was series five.
Oh, okay. The one, two episodes when they just destroy all the Lannister army.
Yeah. The Queen's something, the Queen's Wrath or something like that it was.
Yeah. I mean, that was just breathtaking. I think that was really the kind of the biggest payoff. But here, you're right. When they start destroying these White Walkers, then it was incredible. Absolutely wonderful to watch.
Nin, what were your thoughts?
I actually thought, yes, they're going to win. Clean sweepstake. They're going to get out. Happy days. You get that payoff. And of course, didn't quite happen.
No.
Then suddenly Steve Backley turns up in the javelin event. And
What did you think about? Why the fuck didn't he jump on the dragon himself? Why was he fighting them? There's dragons there. Let them deal with them. What are you doing?
Well, it's funny because at first I was kind of like, okay, like you were saying before, Martyr, Jon Snow. But actually, when I rewatched it, they are just continually coming for the.
And they are super close as well now. And if the dragon turns its head to sort of breathe fire, it would have injured itself. The proximity was too close, in my opinion. It needed human to White Walker contact.
Right. Okay. Maybe.
Yeah.
I suppose. Yeah. I mean, it was called The Spoils of War, actually, that one, Jess, the two episodes ago. But yeah, I mean, okay, that makes more sense then, because I just thought, again, another bit of a logic flaw in John, what he was doing. But then, as John was getting closer, Ser Jorah looks back and goes, John, stop, come back. And then, I'm sorry, but this scene with the javelin, when he hands it to him, you know, he's going for gold. My God, does he fucking get it? This guy is superb, isn't he? At javelin throwing. I've never seen anyone like him. He must be so talented. But anyway, he hits Viserion, I think it is. And I think your heart breaks. Your heart just breaks at this point. Mine did. And my wife was, this was the bit where she was screaming, no. Like, as in, I'm sitting next to her and she's waving at the screen, no. Don't hit the dragon. Mm-hmm. The death scene is just, there's blood everywhere, and then the way it slides into the water, they really make you feel it, don't they, Nin? They really fucking...
They really do. And, you know, I was screaming, no, but for very different reasons, because I thought, oh, shit, Gags and one of his million theories is going to be right. We're going to have a White Walker dragon on our hands. But I think what really sort of painted the picture so well in terms of, oh my God, they've just lost something so crucial, was not only Daenerys' face, but everyone else's who was on, you know, the remainder five four, should I say, because obviously John's fighting still.
He's in a bit of shit, but, John is, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, you see them all on the dragon, obviously, because they've all mounted up to get on top of the dragon, and they all just look absolutely devastated, and the shriek from the dragons as well, because they've lost a sibling.
Oh, yeah, great scene. So, I mean, they've gone. Their look on their faces, Jess, is going from a position of power to absolute fear. That's what I felt. The others, Daenerys has lost a kid, so she's, that's the mother's, you know, her
Jorah
face.
Looked devastated. I thought Jorah looked...
Yeah, of course, because they would be, but the fear as well, you could see the fear. Mm-hmm. We had the upper hand. We got the dragons.
Yeah, and suddenly one of them goes, and they might start thinking, okay, what if he takes out Drogon? We are stranded, absolutely stranded. Forget
that
everything else.
Hit home.
They've got
that
no way out.
Home. At this point, John gets really adrenaline rush and thinks he's Rambo and starts to carve through a few more, and then he sees, oh, they have another spear. That's
yeah, and
when
it's time,
shit
it's time to get the fuck out, Danny. So he's just like, go, and suddenly they all twig, so they start flapping off. And once again, you know, Mr. Javelin, who I have to say, he's a different actor now to the one who's been in the previous five series. So we've got a completely
he's the same one.
No, he's a different actor.
Really?
In the first, either five or six series is some bloke called Richard Blake or something like that, and now it's some Slovenian or Slovakian guy, and I was looking at his face thinking, that's not the Night King, like this guy literally looks different, is this just CGI or what? And then I googled it and it's a different actor, so I was a bit confused. Then anyway, gets his javelin and he makes his run, and just as Danny's taking over, they manage to do a little duck and roll and stuff, and it goes past, and you're like, thank fuck. But John is stranded.
He's stranded, but you know, they've put him into the water as well. At that point, I shit myself as well, because I thought, he ain't getting out of there.
I thought White Walker, Jon Snow, shit.
My God, you know what? I thought the same. I thought, we're fucked. It's going to be White Walker, Jon Snow. He's going to become the next fucking white, like the one of the leads with the Night King. And yeah. I thought, how can they do this after everything he's been through, right? Why are they killing him off for? Like, obviously, a lot of people thought no chance. You know, a lot of
no chance. I thought I was one of those people who thought no chance, to be honest. First of all, this dude is like, he's fireproof.
We don't know that yet if he's fireproof.
I don't know. Like, I mean, like with the scene with the dragon last week.
Yeah, but we don't know if he burns or not. We haven't seen anywhere in six, seven seasons of him being exposed to fire. It's going to happen, though.
That is true, but he has been exposed to a knife to the heart and came back to life. So, okay, he's knife-proof. He might be fireproof.
He isn't knife-proof. He got brought back by the fucking thingy, the woman.
Yeah, but the Lord of the Light can't bring everyone back.
Is it?
No, exactly. Absolutely. Okay. It's very it's very picky and choosy.
Yeah, it picks and chooses to serve the purpose. And obviously, Jon Snow had some purpose, or has a massive purpose, which is evident. You and I can't come back.
Here's me thinking that I'm safe. I've got a few lives, like fucking Dondarrion man.
Yeah, he's a cat.
He's everything. Pretty. No, Jon Snow. He's not. I swear, you could put him in a dishwasher and it'd be fine as well.
Yeah, Dondarrion's got one life left, and then he's not a cat. He would have had nine. He's on his seventh and last. He's lost his priest. But basically, I just thought as well at this point.
Even Jon Snow's hair's gone straight. Come on, people. The guy's immortal.
Ice, man. It's ice. They straightened it. The ice become icicles, mate. But basically, I just thought when, you know, he was getting that second spear up, the way they showed the dragon struggling to fly off, because it's got five more people on it, and it's used to flying around with a very light Danny, and it was just, and obviously slippery. I thought they did it perfectly. I really did. It built the tension as well. Like, shit, man, get up. What are you doing? Just get go. And then she turns at the right minute, at the right second, and Ser Jorah nearly falls off. And the Hound saves him. Really, really good. Really little good little bits, I thought. But the bit where she flies off then, you should see her face there. She's lost not only her kid, but she thinks she's lost Jon Snow as well.
Okay, so hang on. Let me just jump in at that point. A lot of criticism has come saying, okay, why didn't the Night King just take his javelin and first things first, just chuck it at Drogon? Because they're just sitting ducks at that point. Why didn't he just go straight for it? So I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, it's a good one, but maybe, I don't know, someone jumps
in the
way.
I think he threw it at the... This is what I think. Because if you actually look at the... is it Viserion? What's the one that got killed?
Viserion.
Viserion.
okay, because it was kind of flying towards, wasn't it? And it was going to breathe fire on them.
Yeah, it was going to, it was turning towards the Night King, to be fair.
And maybe, yeah, and maybe it was a warning shot as well. Kind of like, I'm just going to kill one of them and you're going to watch it, and then I'm going to kill the one that you're on.
He does seem like a cruel bastard, to be fair.
But also, I think the dragons at that point, I mean, Drogon's on the floor, so he's not really doing any damage. But the other two are in the air, wiping out his army. So from a tactical perspective, it's probably cleverer to knock out the ones in the air.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was a lot of criticism. Or you could just end the whole thing. You could kill Dany, you could kill the dragons, blah, blah, blah. But I think the spear kind of goes through Viserion's throat when he's breathing fire, and maybe that's why he catches fire. I don't know. I mean, this is just, you know, like next level stuff. But I kind of see the logic. There was a lot of criticism, but I think it was a bit overboard, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
If can you imagine if you threw it at a dragon and they all died? Game over.
Yeah, just like, be stupid. You know, wow, wait, we're really analysing really big time here, aren't they? Whoever's pissed off with that, it's like, what the fuck's your problem?
I'm kind of relieved that he threw it at Viserion.
Yeah.
Wait, yeah, I mean, what it does is with Viserion, we know, you know, what's going to happen now, but we'll quickly touch on it right at the end. Actually, we'll do it now. Viserion, it's very interesting because he was, out of the three kids of Aerys, you know, Viserys, Rhaegar and Daenerys, the two of them were very nice people, or very nice. They've got, you know, the backstory of them that comes through. And when you watch the seven seasons, is that Daenerys and Rhaegar were really nice, but Viserys was an evil bastard. So it kind of has gone the right way. Do you get what I mean? With one dragon going evil. It's exactly like the one who's named after, kind of thing. Anyway, so Nyn, his uncle, saves him. He gets out of the water. Shock horror.
Oh, yeah. He gets out and you're like, yes, fist pump, because he grabs his sword. And of course, the White Walkers haven't cleared yet. And then you think, oh, shit. They've just you know, right. What can possibly save him now? What could potentially save him? Because he's literally frozen. His mortar skills are pretty much non-existent. He's struggling to hold his sword, but he still stood there like the brave guy that he is, thinking he's going to take them on. And then in comes swooping Uncle Ben. We don't know who's uncle, just somebody swinging like this lantern flame thing, knocking out a lot of White Walkers.
Benjen.
Anyway, I call him Uncle Ben. And I kid you not, I never got so emotional at an Uncle Ben since watching a Spider-Man movie.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Saves him.
Yeah, it was, you know what?
How many lifelines, how much more proof does this guy need that how important and crucial he is? He's got a freakish look.
Yeah, Benjen knows something. But the other thing is, why didn't they just send a dragon down to get him? You know the other one? The one that's going to be his, which was his dad's. It would have looked so much better, I think, if the dragon just swooped down as they were going to get him and he just grabs him and flies off really quick. Because obviously the Night King's not ready then for that. But I just thought that would have been a better way because poor
Yeah,
Ben.
I mean, I can
Benjen
see that.
Benjen got wasted, man. Poor chap.
Yeah.
He's going to come back as a White Walker as well, isn't he? I assume.
Probably.
Yeah, I can understand why the other dragon didn't come down, because first of all, it's in a state of shock or whatever because its siblings just died. And second of all, I think, how is it actually going to know exactly where Jon is? And at that point, plus the Night King is already just javelined, you know, he's clearly got javelins for days, so he might have just had another pop at it and stuff. There's no point losing two dragons at that point, because then you're in real trouble.
And yeah, what's left here is, she waits for John. Obviously, he turns up, thanks to Benjen. And, it looks like Dondarrion's going his own way, because he goes, you know, Clegane, we'll meet again. And he goes, fuck it. He makes a funny joke or something, like, you know, fuck that or something like that.
Fucking hope not.
Yeah, fucking hope not. Yeah, so I don't know where Dondarrion's going, because the rest of them seem to be going on the boat. But, so now that there's that emotional scene, Nyn, with Jon Snow and Daenerys.
Yeah. Of course, she first of all discovers all his scars and realises he took a knife to the heart wasn't a metaphor. It pretty much happened. She saw all the scars on his body. And then obviously he comes around and she's there. And I love the fact that the first thing he said, he was so remorseful. There was just so much remorse in his voice when he apologised for obviously the death of one of her children. He, you know, because she's told him before that my dragons are my children. So he knew instantly, shit, I've messed up here big time. And, you know, because of my stupidity or our stupidity, you've just lost one of your kids. And
she's more asked about him. It's so nice.
Yeah. And then she, you know, she goes, "They're my children, you know that." And he goes, "We never should have gone." And she goes, "But I believe now. I needed to see it." So in a, you know, it, she kind of does a U-turn and kind of says, "Well, I had to go there to see what you were on about, and now I see it, and now I want to fight with you. I want to take on these White Walkers, and I lost a child, and I want to end the Night King." I thought it was really, really good.
And he says, "Jess, thank you, Danny."
That was for the fans, right?
Yeah, it was for the fans. And but she goes, "No one's called me Danny before. Well, actually, my brother has, and I don't think you want to be in that company." And then he goes, "Okay, how's this, my queen? I can't bend the knee though because of this." And then she pretty much starts crying. I can't believe it. She started crying.
Bend the knee at this point reminds me of Joey and Friends saying, "How you doing?"
It's yeah,
like yes.
A catchphrase now, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Like this morning I was doing an insanity workout, and at the end of it, Sean T in the warm down is like, "Bend the knee," and I was like, "Oh no, I can't escape this. Just can't escape this at any point now." So it is I like it. I like the kind of interplay between John and Danny. I think they've handled it pretty well over.
Yeah, they're holding hands and stuff in this as well, aren't they? And she just removes her hands in the end when she realizes, "Oh shit, you know what? I've got a bit too emotional here. I need to go back to being Ice Maiden or Fire Maiden, whatever she wants." And she removes the hand from him and says, "Get some rest." And he, like a really good little boy, closes his eyes and fucks off. I just thought it was dead funny. I was like, "What? What's happening here?" But yeah, it was an emotional scene though. Very nice. They put that really good music on in the background, the Game of Thrones emotional one that they did with Arya when she went back to Winterfell. I think they play that. The music's so good. They're just nailing everything with the music, I think, you know. So yeah, it was such a good scene. I just can't wait for him to find out, you know, who he is, because he's now given up that right and wants to follow her as queen, but he's the real one, Nin.
I know. And I think the reason why she got emotional was because he's such a stubborn sod.
Yeah.
And she thought, oh my God, for him to come around and, you know, he believes in me, because, you know, she's been working for like 3 episodes, God knows what time frame that is, to kind of get him to bend the knee. But the reason why he's bending the knee is because she came through for them.
Yeah, she did.
And
she
probably owes him as well.
No, Tormund as well. You know what he said at the start? Did you remember that?
And also there's a sense of owing as well, because she lost one of her kids.
Yeah, of course. But I think if you look at what Tormund said at the start, when he said, "Look, Mansraider was a really nice man," or
I remember that conversation. So many people died.
So many people died because of his stubbornness.
Yes.
So don't you've spent too much time with the free folk, mate. That's why you're refusing to bend the knee. So yeah, I get what you mean. Your points are valid as well in terms of, you know, she's just fucking saved his life, you know,
and lost a kid.
And lost a kid for you. So I think Jesse was right to bend the knee.
Yeah, I completely agree. And this is the point with Tyrion. Tyrion's kind of always having this go at Dany because he's kind of scared she's going to turn into this mad queen because she barbecued those guys last week. But in reality, the bigger picture is she is a good person. You know, she's saved Jon Snow. She has broken the chains. She's done all these amazing things. And I think that's what we kind of see more than anything as viewers, and Jon Snow sees it. And I think he's right to bend the knee, just get out of the way. And you can see how happy she is when he says that.
Exactly right. Quickly then, before we go, theories, anything then you think's going to happen next?
Oh, I don't know. It's quite a tough one. I think winter will be coming a lot quicker now that they have a dragon.
Yeah. Go and spread your ice.
Yeah. Breathe icicles everywhere.
Okay. Jess, any theories, mate?
Oh, there's a lot of theories, to be honest. I'm sure you've got a list of them, Gags. But one of the things that kind of dawned on me is that now they've got a dragon, the ice dragon. They can fly over the wall. They don't even need to worry about the wall anymore, in theory. Obviously, the actual army, but my man on his dragon can just go and ice the whole wall and break it down, probably. So I don't think that's going to be too much of an issue. I think maybe that'll be the theme of the next episode. I don't know. I also think the episode that's coming is not going to wrap everything up in a nice, neat bow. It's going to leave a lot of loose ends because, you know, there's a whole series yet to go after this. So, and also someone's going to die. Someone's got to die, I'm sure. I don't know who, but yeah, the army is coming, the army of the dead. And I think it's going to be big.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that these guys are going to take that white to Cersei, you know, They're going to get there, and you know how this thing works. They'll be there within 2 minutes because John's going to be miraculously fine, and Brienne's going to turn up there as well, and everyone's going to be there having this meeting, and in flies Mr. Night King with a fucking ice dragon himself, and they're going to be basically going at it outside King's Landing, or he's going to take someone out. He will take somebody out. I have a feeling it's Daenerys, but that's just me being... People think I'm being stupid, but yeah, I have a feeling she's... And somehow the Jon Snow thing comes out next episode. It's got to come out soon. Got to. They've got to go into the final season with people knowing, you know, that he's the heir. You know, and him knowing, him getting that. I want to see him know. I want to learn. You know, I want to see... how he evolves. Do you get what I mean? I want to watch that.
Yeah, I want to see him shake off the bastard title as well, you know?
And just say, like, I'm going to kick the shit out of you. So this is the thing. I just need to know that. But I don't know whether you agree with any of that, Jess.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. I think John and Danny are the central couple to this, and it would be a tragedy to lose either of them. I don't think we're going to lose Jon Snow anytime at all. I think he's the key to the whole thing, to be honest. In terms of a theory, I don't know... What do you guys think about Bran? How important is he to this whole thing? Because there is a theory going around. I mean, it's not a spoiler or anything because no one knows if it's true or not, but about who the Night King might actually be. Shall I say it?
I think Bran, people are saying it's Bran.
People are saying it's Bran. Oh. Yeah, and like it's kind of because he can obviously walk through time, and then with the whole Hodor thing and stuff like that, he might be kind of trapped in this infinite loop or something. And people are also saying that maybe the Night King's not actually a bad person. Maybe that's why he didn't go and kill Jon and all these kind of or Daenerys and stuff. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's a bridge too far. The other thing I'd say is, as far as Cersei goes, they're trying to drag this proof to Cersei. I mean, the Mountain's already died, right? And Qyburn has brought back the Mountain from life. So that Mountain is a zombie. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of kind of inconsistencies, and I reckon that a lot of them are going to be tied up in the next episode, to be honest. And also Cersei will pull some shit because she will lay a trap at some point. Sure.
That's what I think. Someone's going to die. Someone big's going to go next episode. I just keep feeling it's Dany. It would hurt the shit out of me because I love her and I would love to be wrong. I'm one of those that loves being wrong. But Nin, your thoughts?
I don't like any of your theories. Especially about losing the best ones. I mean, I can't imagine a full season of Game of Thrones without Daenerys Targaryen.
It's only six episodes.
Yeah, it's still too long.
Okay, fine. Still too long.
I think Nina's right, to be honest. I think at this point, because they've run out of source material from George R.R. Martin, so they're not working off the books. So this is more of a TV show, really, as opposed to a show based on the books. So I think at this point, they're kind of crowd-pleasing a bit, and that's one of the criticisms. But I think it's okay. You know, this is a fantasy show. I think some of the writing and plot points and holes could be better for sure, but I'm just determined to enjoy it. When that last episode comes out, I'm not going to be sitting there thinking, oh, well, what about this? What about that? I'm just going to enjoy it, you know? And I think that's the key to it. Don't go too deep into it. Some people do. That's their idea of fun. But I think don't let it ruin your enjoyment of what is a great TV show.
I'd have to agree with that just on a final point. And I love the fact that we're actually, as viewers, getting something back. You know, we're getting some benefits back from watching this, because when it was almost to the book, I felt like we were always losing, you know, like the Battle of the Bastards, not the Battle of the Bastards, the Red Wedding and stuff. And, you know, you were always left like, oh my God, I can't believe that's happened. And Ned Stark's death, and, you know, losing big, big characters. You were always on the losing team. So I think it'd be quite nice if you were actually on the winning team for once. Yeah. A Liverpool fan.
Oh, fuck. You know, and even losing, even losing Viserion, you know, the dragon in this, was a kind of a win for fans, because you got to see that White Walker war. You got to see something you've never seen, an unbelievable scene, you know, that was shot. Oh my God, the CGI is unbelievable. But you also get to see one of the theories that nobody ever thought was real about the dead dragon. So, you know, that all coming through is pretty mental. Pretty mental.
And what I said way back at the beginning of this episode about the sort of overarching theme of this episode is sibling rivalry. So you had Sansa and Arya, and then Tyrion, the whole dynamic with Jaime is kind of brought over from last week, because Dany doesn't trust him anymore. She doesn't trust Tyrion fully. And now, if you talk about sibling rivalries, look at the Dragons. It's 2-1-1 now. It's two fire-breathing yes. ones against nice one. So that was what I thought the kind of central theme of this episode was.
Very interesting. You know what? That is pretty much it. I've got to go and record another show in a few minutes. So, Nin, anything you want to plug?
Just check out AI TV. Please subscribe to our channel. Really appreciate it. I'll start doing weekly content, hopefully.
On YouTube, that is, yeah, Anfield Index, YouTube.com/AnfieldIndexTV, I think, or Anfield Index, one of them. Jess, anything to plug, my friend?
Couple of things. I've got the Transatlantic Rebels podcast, which is one of my own that I do with a guy called Rashad. And we talk about books, films, TV, and music. My social media is JessalTV, which is JESALTV, except Instagram, which is BenDenis23.
Get lost. No,
or is
chance.
It Nipples and Toes 23? That was none.
That was one of the last one. That was too funny. Oh my god! Right, thank you so much, both of you. That was great. It was one of the longest shows. It probably deserved it. But yeah, if you've got any theories yourself, feel free to send them into @OnTheBoxPodcast@GagStandin, and I'll try and not retweeting them. Actually, I just want them for my personal, so my mind works. I love it. But yeah, any feedback, really appreciate it. We'll be back in a week or so's time with the biggest episode yet, the longest episode yet. I think 81 minutes it's going to be. It's going to be something special. See you next week on The Box.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.